Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I'll be talking to one of the authors of Reactionary Republicanism, How the Tea Party and the House Paved the Way for Trump's Victory. The authors are Brian Gervais and Erwin Morris. I have Brian on the phone today. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Heath. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely a pleasure. We were just talking about, we're in the let's call it the hangover of the APSA meeting. We're back to our regular lives. But in the meantime, you've published this really interesting book with your colleague, Erwin Morris. Before we talk about the book, would you just introduce yourself a little bit and also your co-author on it?
Sure. I'm Brian Gervais. I am an assistant professor at the University of Texas at San Antonio. And my co-author, Erwin Morris, is a professor and chair at the Department of Government and Politics at the University of Maryland.
The book that the two of you have written is on a subject matter of that there have been a number of really interesting books. So we know things about the Tea Party, but we don't know very much about the specific part of the Tea Party that you're focusing on. You're focusing on Congress,
right?
In a way that really no one has before, and especially not in this depth. And it makes the book so really interesting and timely in some ways that we'll talk about maybe towards the end of the conversation. But let's just get started kind of just on that definitional thing. When you describe the Tea Party, what do you mean in the book? And maybe how is it a little different than some of the other books that we may have read or things that we may have heard about the Tea Party? So define it for us from the beginning. What is the Tea Party?
Yeah, so we got interested in studying the Tea Party in Congress shortly after the Tea Party caucus first launched in the House of Representatives. Seems so long ago, but Michelle Bachmann created it. And around the fall of 2009 or so, ahead of the 2010 midterm elections. And our initial conception of the Tea Party in Congress was really just that, right? It's the first sort of institutionalized version of the Tea Party versus, you know, the Tea Party, the mass public, people attending rallies, et cetera. And also Tea Party organizations like Tea Party Express and Freedom Works and other Tea Party elites like Sarah Palin and others. And so we really thought, well, if we want to understand the Tea Party in Congress, we just need to focus on this formal caucus, the Tea Party in caucus. And our initial sort of research on the Tea Party is really just focused on members of that caucus and what made them different from other House Republicans. Over time, we sort of reassessed that, especially after the 2012 elections. The Tea Party caucus sort of faded. This formal vehicle for the Tea Party really no longer existed anymore. It was said to exist, but there really wasn't formal membership anymore. And so after that, we really started to go about looking at the Tea Party slightly differently. And we really realized there's sort of two dimensions to the extent to which House Republicans are associated with the Tea Party. There's some House Republicans who make efforts to attach, made efforts to attach themselves to the Tea Party, to be seen as part of the broader Tea Party movement. And there's other members who are receiving backing from those sort of external Tea Party elements we were talking about, the Tea Party, the mass public, meaning Tea Party activists, and Tea Party organizations like Freedom Works, Tea Party Express, etc. Some members got support from or were attached to the Tea Party on both of these dimensions, meaning they made efforts to self-identify as Tea Partiers, and they were receiving outside support from the Tea Party. And some received no support or weren't associated with the Tea Party at all on either dimension. And so when we talk about the Tea Party members in Congress, we're really talking about where they fall in these two dimensions of Tea Party attachment, that's self-identification, and Tea Party support. Or support from the external Tea Party.
Now, one of the ways that you sort of group this together is with these black tea, green tea, white tea, and coffee legislators. What is this shorthand that you use throughout the book, and I imagine you'll refer to? What are those indicators? How do they connect to this conceptualization that you just described?
Yeah, so black tea was the term we came up for members that were high in both dimensions, right? So they're sort of the core members. There's no doubt that these are Tea Partiers, meaning they made efforts to attach themselves to the Tea Party, self-identify. They are above average on that dimension, and they're also getting support from the outside Tea Party, meaning they are getting endorsements from Tea Party organizations. They were getting campaign contributions from Tea Party organizations, and their activists were supporting them, right? So Tea Party activists online were promoting them and promoting their ideas, right? And they're also, and so they're high in both of these dimensions, and so we're sure that those folks are the Tea Party. Green Tea was the label we came up for folks who were high on Tea Party attachment, meaning they made efforts to identify as Tea Partiers, but they weren't necessarily getting support from the outside, right, from the external Tea Party movement. White Tea is just the opposite. Those are folks who were getting the outside Tea Party support, but weren't making efforts to identify as Tea Party members. They weren't trying to attach themselves to the movement. And then we refer to House Republicans who had no connection to the Tea Party on either dimension as coffee members, right? They're not tea at all. They're just, you know, we might call them the establishment Republicans, the sort of old school type.
And what's the breakdown for the Congresses that you studied between these different categories? How many, what's the percentage of members of Congress that fit into these categories?
So it changes between the 112th and 113th Congresses, right? The two we're looking at, right? So the 112th goes from January 2011 to January 2013. 113th goes from January 2013 to January 2015. And we find that in the 112th, a much larger percentage of the of members are some type of Tea Partier, right? So they fall into a non-coffee category. It was something like 60% in the 112th. That shrinks in the 113th. It goes down, but still roughly 4 in 10 members of Congress were some type of Tea Partier in the 113th, right? So they're sizable percentages of the Republican conference were associated with the Tea Party in some fashion in both Congresses. And we think this sort of is different from the conventional wisdom, which is that you know, Tea Party in the House, the Tea Party in Congress was sort of this small niche group of legislators. It was much more sizable than that. There were... even though members' association with the Tea Party changed over time, a good percentage of the Tea Party in the House, a good percentage of the Republican Conference was associated with the Tea Party at some point, and much more than I think folks generally recognize.
In Chapter 4, one of the things that you do is you try to figure out, so what predicts whether somebody is going to be attached to the Tea Party in the 112th Congress? And you look at a number of factors, especially the diversity of the members' district. Would you talk a little bit about that analysis and what motivated it and what you discovered about what predicted whether one would be closely attached or not attached to the Tea Party?
Right. So when it came to Tea Party support, we found that, and again, this is support from the external Tea Party. We found that support really did flow to less senior members, right, from more competitive districts. And we interpreted that to really mean that these outside groups, these outside activists, they were supporting vulnerable members, right, vulnerable Republicans. They weren't necessarily trying to find folks who were most ideologically aligned with the Tea Party or with conservatism, et cetera, right? And this makes some sense. There's a limitation to the amount of resources you have. You can only give so many endorsements, or if you give endorsements to everybody, endorsements become meaningless. You only have so much, so many campaign funds to dole out. So you're going to be very strategic in where you choose to put your energy and to put your money and to put your endorsements. And so you're going to go to vulnerable members. On the other hand, members who chose to attach to the Tea Party, self-identify as a Tea Party, make efforts to connect themselves to the Tea Party movement, right? This sort of Tea Party attachment is really predicted by the racial and ethnic demographics of their districts, right? So legislators with the closest attachment to the Tea Party, they really served districts in which the African-American and Latino populations were relatively large. Right. And where there was significant opposition to Barack Obama's presidency, and there were above average levels of racial resentment in these districts. right? So we sort of find, and this is something others have found too, that racial resentment and anti-immigration attitudes were really tied to or predicted whether or not a member associated with the Tea Party or not.
So we know this about their constituents and what's going on in their district. What happens once they arrive in Washington, or if they've already been elected, once they return to Washington, about how they legislate? Do they legislate in a way that corresponds to what you found, what you just described about racial resentment and views about immigration? How do the members actually vote?
Yeah, and I think this is perhaps one of the most interesting findings we have, right? We think of the Tea Party as being very conservative on economic grounds, fiscal grounds, right? The Tea Party were all about the budget, about the debt, etc. We don't find much of a difference between Tea Party Republicans and regular House Republicans when it comes to economic issues, right? In general, the Republican Conference is very conservative on fiscal matters. Whether or not they were attached to the Tea Party or not, or affiliated with the Tea Party or not, makes no real difference. Where Tea Party attachment did matter, right? So members attaching to the or attaching to the Tea Party, right? Where that did matter was on issues that had to do with social issues and racial issues, right? So Tea Party or members who attach themselves to the Tea Party, the so-called Black Teas and Green Teas, were more conservative on issues that had to do with resisting things like employer coverage of contraceptives. They were resistant to medical marijuana, right? So these sort of social issues. And they are in favor of prohibitions on abortion. They are in favor of work requirements for SNAP beneficiaries, right? Food stamps. And they were also had voting records that we might describe as more conservative on racial grounds. What we mean by that is that they were in favor of limiting the Department of Justice ability to challenge controversial state immigration laws, and also blocking the DOJ's ability to help African-American farmers who had claimed discrimination in the past. They were made efforts to block DACA, and they also backed policies or were interested in policies having to do with fair housing and wages that disproportionately affected minority communities. So this is how they differentiated themselves, at least on legislative grounds, from regular House or House Republicans, a much more socially and racially conservative voting record.
So this I think would be in some ways maybe not eye-opening, but really does change the way in which the Tea Party portrayed itself, which was concerned mainly and sometimes almost exclusively with balancing the budget and cutting federal spending. What you found is something very different, and it suggests that the way in which they had portrayed themselves, or at least were portrayed in the media, didn't really fit with the way in which they legislated. You have an additional way to look at that, which is the way in which they communicated, especially with social media. So was this paradox reflected in the social media communications, or were they as resentful as one might imagine, given some of these voting patterns?
Yeah, so when we looked at, we collected all the tweets issued by House Republicans' official Twitter accounts throughout the four-year period we're studying, right? So we have a lot of tweets to look at. And what we are looking for are a couple things specifically. We want to measure different types of affect, that is emotion, in those tweets, right? So we want to look at how angry, how sad, and how anxious the tweets were. And we also want to look at the presence of incivility in those tweets as well, right? So another element of the conventional wisdom about the Tea Party is that it's relatively uncivil and it's resentful and describes a declining America. And we found that members associated with the Tea Party who attached themselves to the Tea Party were more likely to issue tweets that had high levels of anger and high levels of sadness, right? And in those tweets are sort of describing a declining United States, right? They're describing a United States that whose best days were behind it, a United States in which the federal government had failed, a United States in which the federal government was even in some ways this sort of big bully, all right, picking on folks, and certainly had favorites, right? And this is sort of an underlying element in all the tweets, is that there are certain groups that are being favored by the federal government, specifically the Obama administration, and others that aren't. And we found lots of discussion, lots of sort of hyperbolic rhetoric regarding Obama specifically and his sort of efforts to consolidate power and ignore the Constitution. And at the same time, this description of concern about illegal immigrants declining hope in the United States of economic decline overall, of people sort of giving up, et cetera, right? So it's a very it's a description of a changing United States, and one in which really paints a picture of a country in despair and decline.
Now, we don't today in 2018 hear members of Congress self-identify as Tea Party, and we also don't see a Tea Party organizations making the kinds of endorsements and participating. Is the Tea Party gone, or is what we call it simply changed?
I think it's the latter, right? The Tea Party's not gone. It lives on. We're just not calling it the Tea Party anymore, right? To some extent, we have factions within Congress that we'd still associate with the Tea Party or get identified as Tea Party factions, right? The Freedom Caucus in the House, Justin Amash's Liberty Caucus as well, right? But the Tea Party, I think, its effect on Congress is still here, right? We still see this sort of voting records, or rather Tea Party Republicans, or who were formerly part of the Tea Party, still voting along the same lines. The members who were part of the Tea Party, a few years ago, many of them are still in Congress and doing the same sort of things they were doing while they were, calling themselves Tea Party Republicans. And at the same time, we've almost seen the Tea Party in the House expand out of the legislative branch and into the executive branch as well, right? There's a number of former members of the House who are affiliated with the Tea Party that are now in the executive branch, now part of the Trump administration. For example, Tom Price, who was the Secretary of Health and Human Services, not any longer, but he was a green tea, right? He was someone who attached himself to the Tea Party while he was in the House. Mick Mulvaney, currently the director of the OMB, was also a green tea. Jim Bridenstine, who is the current head of NASA, was also a green tea. And even some founding members of the now defunct Tea Party caucus, who joined up when Michelle Bachmann first launched it. Two very different people. Pete Hoekstra, who is now an ambassador in the Trump administration, he was part of the Tea Party caucus when it first launched. And Vice President Mike Pence was a member of the Tea Party caucus when it first launched. And so we see Tea Party House members, these folks whose behavior we have been measuring over a period of 4 years, that now they're in the executive branch. And now they're taking the same sort of Tea Party policies, or at least positions, and putting them into practice as members of the executive branch.
So in stepping back from the book, what sense do you make of what the Tea Party is? Upon reflection, simply the way in which we describe the most conservative members of Congress? Or is there an intellectual meaning that is not simply a way that we can describe polarization in using a different, more colorful, more evocative term? maybe take that step back and you end the book, you know, the title of the book, How the Tea Party in the House Paved the Way for Trump's Victory. Is this, you know, as likely how conservatives in the House paved the way for Trump's victory? So help us make a little sense of that.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe the Tea Party in general, both the Tea Party in Congress and the Tea Party in the mass public, is this reactionary movement. Right. And the Tea Party in the House, broadly speaking, was this reactionary element that came to power and gained influence in the House of Representatives. And when we say it paved the path to Trump's victory, that's sort of what we mean. Right. It was sort of reactionary elements among the mass public that allowed the Tea Party to take power. But the Tea Party worsened the levels of resentment, right? They if there was sort of this simmering flame of resentment among members of the public, the Tea Party made those flames worse, right? They really attempted to take advantage of this resentment, use it as energy. And so I think that's the way that makes the most sense is think of the Tea Party and its continuing influence is that if we think of Donald Trump's election and his continued support as being the result of reactionary politics, right, the Tea Party played a key role in bringing us from the Republican Party of George W. Bush to Donald Trump. In many ways, Republican voters especially were primed or prepared to accept a candidate like Donald Trump because they become used to the rhetoric. They become used to the approach to politics that the Tea Party brought.
Again, the book, Reactionary Republicanism, How the Tea Party and the House Paved the Way for Trump's Victory. The book is published by Oxford University Press. The authors, Brian Gervais, who you've been hearing from, and his co-author, Erwin Morris. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Heath. That was fun.